why don't kick back and get raw with us.
From the latest hip-hop beefs,
spazzles,
to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host, and as always, I hope you guys are having a wonderful week thus far. And I know that you guys are having a wonderful week. Why? Because it's Christmas week. Now, whether you believe in Jesus or not, you guys had Tuesday off, Christmas was off, Christmas Eve. I know if you did show up to work, it was nothing but drinking probably going on in that office. And for the rest of this week, up until New Year's, I mean, the offices are dead. So again, I know you guys are at least having a wonderful week so far. I know for me personally, this has been a great week. I've been off from work. I had a great Christmas I spent with my family. Shout out to Dario and Janice, who hosted Christmas brunch at their beautiful home in Long Island. And then I came right back to Brooklyn to celebrate with my family here for our annual family get-together. So it's been a great time. So now, guys, this is the last episode for 2018. Like, it's a wrap. This is the last, according to RP, for the year of 2018. And I want to just take this time to thank all of you guys who have tuned in faithfully each and every week, whether it be through the website, the Live 365 app, or through our SoundCloud. Thank you so much. I look forward to your continued support in 2019. And I also want to thank the radio station owners of WJMS. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. It's been several months so far. We've been on the up and up, but thank you for giving me this opportunity, this platform to address the people and talk about important things. Now, for today's show, we're going to have my very special friend, Jaleesa Joseph, Chief Diversity Officer in a small town, the capital of New York, will you? I didn't want to give it out there since she's going to be a little bit discreet, but Chief Diversity Officer of a city, which is a really big deal, and she's the first Chief Diversity Officer of this city, and she's a young professional black attorney. So we're definitely going to enjoy the conversation later on in this show as she talks about her role, and she talks about the transition a little bit, right? We're going into the new year. People are going to be looking for new jobs. There are certain things that you're going to want to know, and understanding diversity and inclusion is going to be a key. So she's going to talk about that a little later, as well as some of her New Year's resolutions. And I will chime in and talk a little bit about some of mine. But before we go deep into the meat of our show, you know we have to take some time out for our sponsors, the Brooklyn Common Space at Bushwick. So limited time offer for 2 months membership is a special deal, 50% off the normal rate for office space at Brooklyn Commons Bushwick location with a 6 month membership agreement. So guys, I'm pushing through the show because I definitely want to get to the meat of the show today. You know what time it is? It's the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
Popping on fleek, the lit.
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So this year's Urban Dictionary word of the week, this year, Jesus, I'm already done with 2019. This week's word of the week is marginal. Marginal, the word for describing a friend that is a taker and not a giver, someone that never shows up for or pays a tab or helps in any way, not a true friend. Example, thanks for showing up at my birthday party, marginal. I really appreciated it. Second example, Russ is so marginal. Jackass got drunk and missed dinner tonight. What the hell? So I've never heard anybody refer to somebody as marginal, and I'm pretty sure that I'm probably not going to incorporate this word into my vocabulary. However, for those of you who have marginal friends in your life and want to find a more discreet way to address them, here you go. Now, you guys know that we are up to our favorite, at least my favorite section of this show, the Big Up of the Week.
Watch it! And you feel big up, all of the woman, them big up, big
big up of the week has been an internet sensation. He goes by the name of Curtis Jenkins, and he hails from Dallas, Texas. And so what did Mr. Jenkins do to get this coveted spot on the According to RP show? Well, Mr. Jenkins is a school bus driver, and he decided that he was going to use his own money to buy Christmas gifts for every child on his route. And I mean, Christmas season is that time where everybody wants to give, but you all know the bus drivers don't make that much money. And for him to be saving money each and every week from his paycheck just to get these kids, and usually bus kids are unruly kids, but to get them Christmas gifts, I could not not big him up on this show. And so basically the story goes that Jenkins and his wife, Shaniqua, put together and got gifts for all of the kids on Curtis Jenkins' route. And, you know, when asked, you know, how did he know what to get? He's been planning this for months. So he's been having conversations with the kids, trying to find out what they like, what they don't like. And he got it for them. And the reason that this is so special is because I'm pretty sure that there are several kids that rode that bus that probably, you know, probably did not have a Christmas. Or was not going to have a Christmas this year. And so for him to find it in his heart and to save the little bit of coins that he already gets, you know, from the school district to buy gifts for these kids, I mean, there are no words for this type of kindness. And so Curtis Jenkins, big up to you. Now, you guys know with every high, there is a low. And this week's low, ooh, it is the Brooklyn, Ohio Huntington Bank branch. Now, this story comes from TheRoot.com, in which an individual by the name of Paul McCowens, hopefully I'm saying his name right, went to a Huntington Bank to cash a check. So this is a black man trying to cash a check in Cleveland or in Brooklyn, Ohio, which is not too far from Cleveland, it looks like. And basically the story goes as this. The individual on December 1st went to go cash his check. He spoke to some tellers, showed them two forms of identification, fingerprint, everything. He did everything that he needed to do to go cash this check. Now, apparently the tellers felt alarmed and annoyed and saw that, I guess, his paycheck was a little too high for an individual of his kind, i.e. being black, and decided that they were going to take steps into their own hands by calling the authorities. And when I say authorities, I mean 911. These individuals, these tellers at this bank, thought that it was best for them to call 911 because this individual, Mr. McCowens, rolls up into their bank and, you know, is trying to cash a check that they deemed was too high of a salary for an individual of Mr. McCowan's complexion. Now, you guys are probably wondering, well, how much was this check? Well, guys, the check was for $1,000 United States currency. Apparently, a $1,000 check as a salary from a job rose eyebrows up in this place to the point where they called 911. And when the authorities showed up, not only did they put Mr. McCowens in handcuffs and put him in the back of the patrol car, they called his job to verify that, one, he was an employee there, and two, the amount of the paycheck. Now, if this is not bullshit, I really don't know what is. If this is not tomfoolery, I don't know what is. So the womp womp of the week goes to the tellers at the Huntington branch in Brooklyn, Ohio. Yes, I gave the coordinates. If you feel like you need to get something off your chest and you live in the area, I mean, do what you got to do, because this is bullshit. And it's again, another example of why being black in America is like an issue and why they do not care about black people. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. But either way, guys, we're going to be ending the show on a positive note, but I had to give this womp womp because this story was just way too alarming for me. But yeah. All right, everyone. So I'm here with my very, very special guest, Jaleesa Joseph. Jaleesa, introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jaleesa Joseph. I'm currently employed as a chief diversity officer for a mid-sized city in upstate New York, which I won't say the name of, but it's the capital of New York. So.
Yeah. Ooh, I wonder what that could be.
serious?
Ooh, the mystery. I mean, but you know what? Because, if I mean, honestly speaking, most people really don't know the capital of New York, so you might actually be lucky in that respect.
I might be okay.
People you might be okay. Yeah, exactly. And it's funny though, when, you know, I think, you know, so diversity and inclusion and being a chief officer, like that seems to be something of a recent trend though, right? We're hearing a lot more diversity officers. Like, what exactly do they do?
You know, tell white people not to be racist. Just kidding. If you're a future employer, just kidding. So in all seriousness, chief diversity officers or diversity and inclusion professionals, there are so many different titles for people in my role. The old school title, which is still used in a lot of places, is usually like affirmative action coordinator. And so it appears that it's become more trendy in recent years because a lot of corporations, and in my case, government offices, have realized the benefits of having an employee whose job really is to oversee all diversity and inclusion benefits, which isn't to say that all officers in a company or a government shouldn't have their eye on those issues, but ultimately, you know, there's a lot to keep up with in the diversity and inclusion or D&I world. There are constantly changes about, you know, what ethnic definitions are appropriate, you know, what gender identifications are appropriate. And those changes happen, especially recently, at a really rapid fire pace. And they're becoming more and more complicated for how businesses should make decisions and how government officers should make decisions while keeping diversity and inclusion in the back of their head. And so I'd say the role is ultimately to be a program manager and ensure that through every part of an organization that the organization is considering diversity and inclusion. So that's from things simple like workforce development, right, which is, you know, traditional counting up the people in your office, you know, making sure that you're doing your best to recruit people of diverse backgrounds, to the more nuanced, like, you know, making sure that things are offered in multiple languages, making sure that there are things like, which is one of my new things, was single gender bathrooms that are gender neutral. Like, it's just trying to keep your eye on the pulse of what's happening.
That's actually pretty interesting because I think that, I mean, we are moving toward an era where we have to consider all of these things. And you would think that because, you know, we're in a sense forced to have to consider these things, that employers would actually consider these things. But it's actually a little mind blowing how, you know, how there's a lack of accommodations for minorities in all sense. So it's not just, you know, when people think about minorities, they think about Black people, Latino people, but we're talking about transgendered people as well.
Or even, and I love that you bring up that point, right? Because people nowadays, the word diversity has been politicized to such a degree that people hear diversity and they hear Black people,
mm-hmm.
right? And they forget that there are multiple dimensions of diversity that include things that goes beyond race and color, right? There's disability. There's, you mentioned transgender. There's, you know, even within the you know, the transgender community, there are multiple layers of diversity, right? There's gender inclusion. There's even, you know, diversity programs that are aimed at, you know, lower income individuals, right? Having a diverse population in terms of income level. You know, there's always, of course, diversity of thought, which I think if there have been a lot of corporations who have been unclear when they're talking about what diversity of thought means. But, you know, the amount of law firms that I've seen that have associates all from one law school, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if those associates are all diverse, they all have the same, they were trained and taught in the same way at the same institution, right? Even pinpointing something like that. Like, you may think that you have 50% women and 50% men, 50% Black people and 50% white people, and you may still not be diverse. And it's interesting because from my perspective, you can I see it now as not only a moral thing to do, but it's also good business to be aware of these things and to keep in mind that your customers are diverse. And so the people you hire need to be able to adapt and need to be aware of that.
Interesting. And I guess that's where that whole like unconscious bias discussion comes in as well too, right? It's funny because I did take a
I did do a continuing legal education course. It was maybe a couple of months ago. My friend Tyer Middleton, shout out to her, had actually put together this leadership conference. It's like this leadership institute. And one of the courses was on implicit bias and unconscious bias. And so there were several presenters who were talking about it. And I recall, like, you know, just listening and, you know, in my mind, I can't say that I always thought of myself as somebody who was, you know, who had implicit biases. But when they actually broke it down, I was like, wow, like, you know, people think that a lot of times people of color think that because they're of color, they're shielded and they're not really part of that group.
Right, they cannot have any bias.
Exactly. And then as they were breaking it down, I was like, oh my gosh, like even within my own group of color, you know, you can see where there's, you know, biases when it comes to, well, what school did you go to? What's your level of education? Where did you grow up, et cetera. And so a lot of times those,
what group are you a part of?
Exactly. A lot of times those things actually do count as that.
They count in a way. I did I went to a presentation that was talking about, and we focused exclusively on diversity and hiring.
Mm-hmm.
And the table I was at, it was a table of about six people. Two of us were younger, and the rest, I would say, were middle-aged. And they brought up a point that I had never considered, and they said that they had to train themselves because they had gotten used to where somebody had a gap in their resume. They were distrustful,
mm-hmm.
and they wondered about that. And the older women at the table brought up the fact that they actually were sort of kinder when they saw that with respect to women, because they all assumed it was because of childbirth or taking time off to take care of children. And the man at the table was like, wow, I never would have thought of that. I would have just assumed it was somebody who didn't work.
Wow.
And so even things like that, like minute, that we don't think about, right? As women, of course, we assume if you see a gap in a woman's resume for 2 or 3 years, you're like, oh, she must have had a baby, taken a couple of years off. Whereas a man reading that might just see it as somebody who didn't try and find work or wasn't working hard enough. Another example that I thought was especially poignant for me and the other younger woman was the fact that as millennials, we jump around a lot, at least to what older people believe, right? Older people,
yeah.
You take a job, you stay there for 10 years. And so they were immediately distrustful of people who moved around too much, whereas we reported that we would be immediately distrustful of anybody who stayed too long.
Yeah, see, that's interesting.
Why are you staying in a position too long?
So I guess go ahead.
If even those tiny decisions that you make based upon your own experiences, which is why at my organization, I supported doing hiring panels just to have multiple people's voices in the room, right? Because you may not realize that you're making a decision about somebody based off of something that has nothing to do with their race, nothing obviously to do with their gender, and you really just think you're making a hiring decision when you may be adding to that hiring decision your own bias perspective.
So how would you overcome this within, you know, the general public? Because again, I guess, you know, if you're in these spaces to know about implicit bias and to know about diversity and inclusion, great. But for the general public, who are these individuals who are actually going out there applying to these jobs and whatnot, like how, you know, I guess, how would we, in a sense, overcome that? How would people really know that this is a thing?
It's tough, I would say, for people on the outside, because you really have to hope that the organizations that you're applying to, you have to hope that they have, either unconscious bias training in place or that they have mechanisms to counteract those unconscious biases. And it's unfortunate because I'd say that most people applying for a job default to the typical ways of avoiding that, right? Like those of us who have names that are a little bit more ethnic, right? Probably anglicize our names.
Mm-hmm.
There are, you know, where we, you know, if you have a big break, I know that I've met a woman who told me that because she always took a couple of years off after she had kids, she started sort of hiding that in her resume. She didn't lie on her resume, but the way that she placed the dates were in such a way that you wouldn't necessarily automatically see that there had been a gap.
Mm-hmm.
So it really comes down to, I think being meaningful about choosing the organizations that you work for. And I think in 2018, if an organization doesn't have a chief diversity officer or, you know, a diversity inclusion officer or vice president of what, you know, whatever the names are, if you don't have somebody in your organization reviewing these things and keeping track of all these possible biases, then you're really doing a disservice to your organization.
So really
people aren't gonna wanna be there.
So the onerous sounds like it's really on the organization, like the employer, to really make sure that these types of like programs and safeguards are built in into their organization rather than having,
100%.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you know, somebody on the outside applying to a job, I mean, it's great that the woman that you mentioned with the gap because of childbirth knew to kind of, you know, manipulate the resume in a way where it wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't be so glaring. But somebody who wouldn't even think to do that, who's like, you know what, I'm honest, I'm me, you know, this is, you know, when they ask me this question about why there are gaps, I'll answer them, not knowing that their resume and the way that it's set up might not even get them to the point to where they can actually explain themselves.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you're applying to an organization that, you know, I call them the old boys club, right, who see women as already lacking because women already, you know, have the nerve to take time off because of children, like, they're already stopping you at the door.
Yeah.
Right.
I think this is very good information because, you know, we're going into the new year and people tend to, you know, look for fresh starts in the new year. So come this week, even this last week of December, come the first week of January, people are really getting their resumes in order. People are really getting, you know, their stuff in order to really get into a space where they can now, you know, find the right job, right? A lot of people enter into the new year with this goal of finding a new job, you know, getting, you know, securing their finances and whatnot. And so I think this information would be really, really helpful for people who would never know. Like, honestly, if I was not in a space to know about implicit bias, and if it was in a requirement for my New York State licensure, I wouldn't really know these things. Exactly.
Yeah, I encourage a lot of people that I meet, like, there are plenty of, you know, every organization doesn't supply it as a course and it's not required for everyone, but there are plenty of free tools online where you can test your own implicit bias just to know. Right. There's the, if anybody's listening, if you Google Harvard study implicit bias, you'll come up with a very basic testing site where you can go through and test your different biases.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great tool for even us as individuals to know and to be aware of and to be mindful of when you're making decisions, when you're talking to people, even when you're, you know, going out and doing your daily errands, right? How you speak to people may be affected by whatever your implicit biases are.
Mm-hmm. And it's really true. I mean, I think that's something that everybody should do, whether you're in the employer realm, involved in hiring and whatnot, even dealing with coworkers. Yeah, because you have to deal with coworkers. You have to. Exactly. And I think it helps even with people who are going into that in that interview phase, right? To kind of know that about themselves, because if they are in a room with different individuals, I think the common thing nowadays or the most popular thing is like panel interviewing now.
Mm-hmm.
There's usually more than one person in a room. As before, you know, you'd interview with one person, that was it. But I think that even your own implicit biases could come out in an interview and could end up ruining your chances of working at this establishment. But you know, you just didn't know.
You didn't realize, right? It's like, you know, I remember I've taken several implicit bias tests and they've all shown that I am biased against other people of color, right? Which, you know, makes sense in terms of how society treats people of color in media and all those other things.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of impossible not to be. And, you know, if I'm not aware of that when I'm interviewing, and the person interviewing me is a black woman, right? I may not be aware that how I'm answering her questions or how even I feel about her questions are impacted because of how I grew up or when I think about other women or when I think about other women of color.
Yeah.
Like, it's really easy to, that's the thing about, I think, about unconscious bias is that it's unconscious. Like, we don't even realize we're slipping into it until it's too late. So I think just being aware that it's possible is just keeping it in the back of your head and treading carefully and being intentional about how you speak to people and how you treat people and how you react to people.
Okay. So what are some, I know we talked about, checking our own implicit biases, and you definitely gave us a resource to be able to take a free test. But in terms of going into the new year now and gearing up for interview season, like, what are some tips that you would give to the people who are listening?
One tip that I really, really recommend is to be intentional. I know that, and it's easy for me to say that, right, because I have a job, I'm upwardly mobile. But when applying to places, if you have the privilege to do so, be intentional about the places that you apply to. Because if they're not taking things seriously before you start working there, that's not going to change afterwards, right? So you want to work in an organization that has at least close to similar values as you do, especially if you're a professional. Right, because at the end of the day, you're going to stay there for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to stress yourself out. So I think the first would really be intentional. Really do the research on any organization that you want to apply to or that you want to interview with. Right, the interview is as much an opportunity for you to evaluate the organization as it is for the organization to evaluate you. Right, so for me, diversity and inclusion and people being aware of that is really important to me. Like, I don't think, especially now having worked in the field myself, I could work for an employer who didn't take it seriously and he didn't show that they were taking it seriously. So that would be a question that I would look into researching and then I would probably ask at the interview.
Okay. Right?
So be intentional about what you're looking for. Don't just, I think it's too easy, especially when we hate a job, to just jump to another one because anything else would be better. And that's just not the case.
Definitely not.
The first tip is really be intentional. I'm a big fan of lists. Like, break down, you know, what you want in a job and what you want in an organization. And then try and start your search from there. What would be another tip? Social media. LinkedIn is a really, and it's a tool that I've been using more and more. It's a really underutilized tool in terms of really, like, accentuating and promoting yourself. I think if you are like me and you graduated law school, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, that's when Facebook and MySpace were really active. And so we were trained a lot in law school to just avoid social media at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
And the downside of that is that I didn't realize how effective LinkedIn was as a networking tool.
Yeah.
It is extremely effective for recruiters to find you, to, you know, network within your network. The algorithm of LinkedIn, I've been reading up on it, you know, can send your profile out to people beyond your network. It's a fascinatingly underutilized tool for networking.
Yeah, I'll say that. I totally agree with that because I've been, you know, told that, you know, with my LinkedIn, they're just like, you know, when you're looking for a job, are you using LinkedIn? Like, how is your LinkedIn profile even looking? Because there, you know, there are certain do's and don'ts on what to put in your LinkedIn profile. There are certain things that you need to actually set up, like certain settings even that you need to like put on so that
your profile picture.
Exactly. And a lot, one thing I've realized is that, you know, a lot of people on LinkedIn, I think they think that it's just like Instagram or Facebook. And so they'll just take a bathroom pic, crop it, and use that. Yeah. And it's definitely
find a headshot.
Yeah.
Find a photo that looks like a headshot.
Yeah, at least looks like one, right?
At least looks like one. You know, fine. Go into a library, get somebody to take a photo of you with a really good camera.
Next to books.
Next to books. Those who are listening, if you're in a professional organization, either a lawyer, an accountant, multiple organizations, at one point or another, there will be a conference or a meeting or an event where there will be free headshots.
Yeah. And
I have never paid for headshots and have 3 different sets.
Yeah, that is definitely true. The Leadership Institute that I referred to that was conducted a couple of months ago, they actually had free headshots there as well too. And so I was able to get you know, a different look, a different look.
A different look, yeah. My last head shot was a woman's bar event, and they just happened to be offering, it was like, it wasn't even a networking event. I think it was like an installation dinner or something.
Mm-hmm.
They had a photographer there. Another good tip, I put my LinkedIn on my resume.
Okay.
It's normal practice nowadays, and I think your LinkedIn is a great place for you to share things that may not necessarily go on your resume.
That's true.
Or like any cover letter.
Yeah, like any articles that you might have written, any blog posts that are pertinent.
Yeah, like I did a CLE. I was a panelist on a CLE. That's not necessarily like a one-time panelist is not necessarily something I would include on my resume.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's on my LinkedIn, and you know it's been shared beyond my network, and so mm-hmm. people can now see that. In addition to all my other skills, you know, I give presentations.
Yeah. Okay. So now, I know we're talking about, you know, helping people get to, you know, in the new year, who are looking for new jobs, what are some things that they got to do to, like, get themselves out there. But what about you? Like, you know, New Year's, January is the start of what? New Year's resolutions, right? And I know there are people out there who are like, oh, I don't do resolutions and whatnot. And I guess, but, I mean, are you a resolution person?
I think the new year is a good time to set, and it's going to sound like semantics, but I think goals.
Okay.
Like, it's a good time, because I think resolutions, they're often so, like, simplistic, and usually it's like, oh, I'm going to, you know, lose 25 pounds this year, or I'm going to start working out, or,
mm-hmm.
where I think, like, actively setting, you know, no more than 5 goals for the next year. In terms of either your professional or your personal life, mm-hmm. and like really trying to make them a habit. So I do technically set resolutions.
AKA goals.
AKA goals. It just sounds better.
It sounds more realistic, right? Like it's actually going to happen.
Right. A resolution is something that you do on New Year's,
mm-hmm.
right? And after, you know, in February, done. A goal and your year end or your new year goals, I feel like are, you know, more directed, more specific.
Okay.
So I set goals.
So are there any new year goals that you have in mind that you're willing to share?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Obviously I'm gonna work out more.
Girl. The workout more, I got it. But I'm with you on that, though. I know every year that's probably 95% of the country's resolution is to sign up for a gym and get their exercise on. But I really am trying to be committed to this goal this year, because it's not just a, oh, look good situation, but it's a health thing as well. You know, you want to make sure that you're in, yeah, optimal health so that you're not getting all these damn diseases.
So what I did, instead of, because that is one of my goals, but instead of that being my resolution, my actual real life measurable goal is to make one vegetarian meal a week.
Mm.
So that there's one meal a week that is healthier. I'm making a conscious decision. And because it's difficult trying to eat vegetarian, and I like bacon, so it's not going to happen forever. But just trying to make it one meal a week that is completely removed from processed foods and, you know, cutting down on the condiments. And so, you know, in terms of my wanting to lose more weight, here's my specific goal that I can do that is, like, easily measured. I think what's the word I'm thinking of? Is possible.
Right? Okay. Like,
I can make one vegetarian meal.
Now, when you say vegetarian, though, because, you know, a lot of times people confuse being vegetarian with, you know, it being, you know, the best thing possible for you in terms of weight loss and whatnot. But vegetarian is just somebody who really just doesn't eat meat. You know, you can load up on the carbs and all, you know, pizza and all that stuff. And, you know, somebody who's vegetarian can say, well, I am a vegetarian, but eat pizza every day and eat pasta every day.
No, I'm calling it vegetarian, but I'm really trying to make it like an intentionally, you know, I think the word healthy doesn't really mean anything. What's that even mean? But like I think vegetarian, when you're eating vegetarian meals, just by removing the meat and then removing any processed foods, like, so
more vegan maybe? Because a lot of vegetarian meat is actually worse than regular meat.
Not really. But I'm still not eat like eggs. You know, it'll probably be something something like one of my favorite go tos, honestly, on like a cold day, is a soup with chickpeas in it. Mm. Just like a simple, the rest of whatever leftover greens I have, I like blend them up, mm-hmm. and then heat them up, and then just pop some chickpeas and some salt and pepper, and it's like a chickpea soup.
Mm. Sounds interesting. Sounds delightful.
And it is. And there's nothing processed in it, right? It's all fresh greens that I have, and chickpeas, and there's no meat, and, you know, there's very little, you know, additives or preservatives. So I guess I'm using the term vegetarian to loosely mean, like, you know, non-processed.
So like organic.
Organic, yeah. Okay. Being very intentional.
Okay. What about professional goals?
Being a better, this is both a professional and a personal one. Being a better, I bought a new planner.
Ooh, okay.
I love me.
Anybody who knows Jaleesa knows that she is queen planner.
If I have one planner, that is like too little. Okay. but no, really trying to be more intentional about scheduling. Not everything, but scheduling in a way that makes sure I'm remembering. There have been too many events or meetings or courses that I missed simply because I forgot about them.
Okay.
And I didn't, or I was late to a meeting because I forgot I had a meeting. Sometimes when you're really busy, the idea of sitting down for an hour at the start of your week to plan out what your week looks like sounds crazy, but I've been doing it for the last couple of weeks, and I found that it makes such a huge difference. So I come into work an hour early on Mondays, and I just spend that first hour just planning out what my week looks like, where are my meetings, what after work events are happening, you know, whose birthday is coming up this week, am I doing a friend meetup, what day are we doing that? Because it as life gets busier and more hectic, it becomes really easy to forget to not only do your work stuff, but also do personal things and hang out with friends. And, you know, it's real easy to be like, oh, it's 3:00. I was supposed to meet everybody at 2:30. Oh man, I'm not going to go anymore. So trying to be like a better scheduler, just on top of things.
I think that's a really good one. I feel like a lot of us, especially those of us in these high-powered positions and jobs or whatever, we tend to lose sight of, I guess, the importance of that type of organization. Because I will tell you, there have been many of times, and I've successfully been able to balance it, that I have double or triple booked myself. And then it throws you into a frenzy. Your stress level is high. I mean, I've successfully been able to make these double and triple bookings, but at the end of the day, when you come home, you're run down, your brain is like fried, and you know, it's just, it's not good. So I think that might be something I might steal from you.
Present.
No, probably not.
And what I've noticed is, yeah, because you were at one event, but really you were like, all right, I gotta stay here for 10 minutes. I gotta make a circle around the room, mm-hmm. make sure everybody sees me before I can run to the next one.
So enjoying and actually getting out, you know, what you need to from these type of encounters don't really happen.
Don't happen. Because like I had an issue a couple weeks ago where I scheduled drinks with a group of professional friends. And that same night, there was a bar association event. And so I think the bar association event started at 5:30. The drinks with friends started at 7.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't leave my office until 6. but I didn't make it to the event until 6:30. And I was like, all right, crap. I paid for this event. So I have to make the rounds, right? And it got to a point where I was having this really interesting discussion with the kids. And it was nearing 7:00. All right, I'm past my 10-minute room around.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm like, and I'm in my head, I'm listening to him, but I'm also thinking like, all right, I have, you know, I have to get out of here in 5 minutes so that I can drive without speeding and meet up with my friend. And it just wasn't, I couldn't enjoy the event that I was at and enjoy the experience of talking to this really awesome judge because I was worrying about my next event.
Yeah.
I was already in my head, I was on the next thing.
Yeah. And I think especially for those people, again, who are trying to network and, you know, transition to different roles, different jobs and whatnot, it's really important to be present when you're at these networking events because your next job can be there. But again, if you're... you know, if you're running on E because you've triple booked or double booked yourself, you know, you know, you're not going to get what you're not going to get out of this event, you know, what you expected.
What you're trying.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's so true. And I'm trying to put a focus. One of my goals is to put more of a focus on my personal friendships, my personal relationships, you know, make sure I'm checking in with, you know, friends that I don't work with anymore, but who I still consider friends. Mm-hmm. Like, make sure I'm emailing people, you know, just to say hi and really putting in. I think as I get older, I'm realizing that, like, keeping friendships is a little bit more work than it used to be, right? We're not all in the same place physically or geographically anymore.
Oh, yeah, it is, definitely. I mean, it's one of those things where, I guess, in terms of scheduling times, you know, that would be something that you would also input into the schedule. Like, I'm going to take 15 minutes to just reach out to, you know, these three people today or these four people today, because it is, yeah, it is work. People aren't available. You know, I sit back and I think about when I was in law school, even, or even before that, when, you know, all you had to really do was, like, go to school. And how easy it was to just meet up with your friends. Yeah. But then as you've moved on to the professional life, you know, you don't have time. Like, once you're starting to get married, you have kids and whatnot, it's not easy to even take that time to have meaningful engagement with these friends. Like, yeah, you could send a, hey, what's up text. And then because you're so busy, you respond maybe 3 days later with the, oh my gosh, I forgot to respond to your message.
Oh, I'm so
notorious for that. But I think,
like,
if
4 days after somebody was like, how was your day today?
It's like, oh man, I didn't see this.
Day, it was fine. Now it's terrible.
But I think scheduling time, like you said, like, making, you know, taking some time at the beginning of the week, you know, who are we reaching out to this week? Let's pick three friends that we're gonna, like, block out 30 minutes maybe to an hour to just really set up a time. Hey. Yeah.
Not to mention, like, the time you need to, you know, for mental health, just to maybe read a book by yourself, or, you know, go do yoga or go do something for yourself. Like, that's my big goal, is, like, to being a better planner so that I can maximize the time that I have to deal with personal relationships, deal with professional affiliations, but then also take time for myself.
And I think that's also an important point. That's also a goal of mine for the new year and beyond, is, you know, self-care. I talk a lot about self-care on this show and then on Frida's World and whatnot. And I, you know, it's something that I do find to be an important topic, because even though we know that we need to do it, it's always the first thing out the window when life starts to get hectic. It's always the first. And I know I struggle.
Like, oh, I can't take time for myself because I got to take care of my work or my kid or my family. Mm-hmm. Like, it seems selfish in real life.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to take this hour for myself.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, I mean, one of my friends reminded me even this morning, you know, I took a couple of days off for the holiday, but yet, you know, I find myself actively behind computers. I think I've done laundry for the entire house. Like, I'm doing all of these, like, things that honestly, like, I could, you know, I could step back from, but it's just, I'm one of those people that I'm always on the go. I always have to be on the go, and I have not learned to not be on the go. So for me, self-care is, like, I always want to do it. I tell people they need to do it because I know personally what happens when you don't. But it's just so, you know, it's one of those that's so difficult. So I'm hoping that in the new year, I can find better ways to really make.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the messed up thing about our society that, like, we all feel selfish for taking time for ourselves. Like, yeah, that is, like, insane, is that everybody I know feels like, well, yeah, I want to take care of myself, or I want to meditate, or I want to do this, but, you know, I have work, and I have my relationships, or my husband, or my kids, or my family, and, like, I can't take time out of my day just for myself, which is crazy when you think about it.
It is crazy. It's a very crazy concept, because, and it's one of those things, too, where it's like, you know, there's just, you have to know who you are. You have to know yourself. And I think that's where having a community, having a tribe of people who really know you come into place. Like, again, this morning, my friend is just like, so you clearly need somebody to take care of you and to be on top of you because you're not doing it by yourself. And I'm like, I know that about me. Like, I can be on top of somebody else, like to the point where they're just like, oh my gosh. But for myself, it's like, I know what I need to do. But because I'm so caught up, in dealing with everybody else and making sure everybody else is good, there's no time to worry about me. But when you have those people like in your corner who's just like, did you drink water today? Did you go to the gym this morning? Like, I know you. What are you eating today? You know, just things like that. Or I need you to shut down your computer. I don't want to see one post on social media. I need you to go grab a book and read. Those are the people you need to like keep you on course. Cause you can't, you know, as much as you would love to say, I can do this on my own, you really can't.
You can't. I mean, I started a book club of friends just because I was finding it so hard for me to sit down and spend an hour a week reading.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, oh, I could, but I need to do laundry or I need to meal prep or I need to, you know, do A, B, C, 85 other things. And then finally, I was like, you know what? If I have a book club, then I'll have to sit down and do this, right? I'll be accountable to other people. And I'll enjoy it. It's something that I'm accountable for, but it's something I also enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a weird obligation, like, right?
It's a weird obligation, but I'm like, yes, I have to do this so that I can talk at book club, but also I want to do this. And now it's a task that, you know, it's a way to create a task out of making time for yourself so that mm-hmm. it doesn't feel selfish.
Yeah.
Like, am I enjoying what I'm reading? Absolutely. But I also want to be able to be an active participant.
Yeah. So it's like you kind of have to trick your mind a little bit, trick yourself to really take time for yourself, which is crazy.
Which is crazy. Like, I've been trying to do like a self-care Sunday thing for myself for a long time. Like, I've been like, all right, on Sundays, I'm going to wake up, I'm going to deep condition my hair, I'm going to do my nails, I'm going to get myself a pedicure, I'm going to do a mask. Like, that's what I do on Sundays. And every Sunday, something gets in the way, and I'll do maybe one of those things.
Yeah.
And so now I have like what I call like my group of Black lawyer friends who I meet up with every other week or so. And now we're doing a thing where we like check in and we're like, what are you doing for self-care Sunday? Are you doing your self-care Sunday?
I like that. Self-care Sunday. I might have to steal that from you.
Oh, it's such a good idea. But again, I have yet to be able to get one full day where I do all of those things. Because it seems like such an indulgence to spend a whole day just taking care of yourself.
Yeah. It sounds like a crime almost.
Yeah. Right. It's like, what? You mean you're going to deep condition your hair and do your nails? when you have friends holding you accountable and checking in, you have people who need it just as much as you do.
Yeah. That's really where it is. All right. So it sounds like you have, you know, your new year sounds a little bright.
Talk to me again in February.
I know, that's the sad part. January is always like, listen, everybody's rejuvenated. You love your job. You're in the gym. You're drinking smoothies. And then February rolls around.
Meal prepping.
Then you're just like, it's Black History Month. I could chill and celebrate for 28 days because it's Black History Month.
Right, like,
and your whole...
smoothies on Black History Month. Yeah. Martin Luther King did not fight for me to have smoothies.
What they fought for was that it was that peach cobbler, though.
That's been great. It's like, oh, I can't do this.
I think that's where we have to get our
like one goal.
We have to get our priorities in order. I think that's really what it is.
I have a project management tool that I keep on my desk that I've started using for the rest of my life. It's like it's the acronym is SMART, and it's specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time bound.
Interesting.
And it's you know, and whenever you're making a goal or you're creating a project, you're supposed to go down that list. Is it specific enough? Is it can it be measured in any way? Is it possible? Is it realistic? Does it make sense? And then is there a realistic deadline? And so I tried to take that business project management theory and apply it to my life. So like the one vegan or one vegetarian or one healthy meal a week I can do that. It's specific enough. I can measure it. It's achievable. It's possible. And, I think in my planner, I wrote, if I can do it for 2 months, then that'll be a success.
So now with this project managing tool, which, what is it called again? Because I feel like people are interested.
So the acronym is SMART.
SMART. S-M-A-R-T.
Yep.
Okay.
S for specific. M for measurable. So essentially establishing concrete criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Either numeric values or something else. A, achievable. Whether or not it's possible. Like, can you actually do it? Which I think mm-hmm. a lot of us set goals for ourselves that we cannot possibly achieve. And that's where you fail. R, relevant. Does it make sense in your life? And then T, time bound. Like setting a deadline, setting a time period. It's so much easier, I think, when you say, I'm going to save $50 every 2 weeks for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, I'm going to save more.
I see. Because that can be anything at that point.
Mm-hmm. And it's easy to fail that. Or the people who, only make $500 a week but want to save $300 a week. Like, that's not realistic.
Yeah. Because what you're going to end up doing is dipping into the savings every week to make up for,
So, I like the SMART tool, or the SMART acronym for, set it, make it specific, make it realistic, and make sure that there's, a time limit on it so that you feel like you achieved something.
And I think that's important.
We set goals. It's so important. We set goals and we don't feel the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Because the goal is, I'm going to work out more. It's okay, but what does that mean?
What are we working towards?
What are we working towards? Because if you're going to work out more to lose weight, then you're not going to feel good if you lose 2 pounds, even though technically you lost weight.
Mm, true. Interesting.
Your goal was really, I'm going to lose 10 pounds.
I think that's probably the best nugget that we've gotten today. I mean, there's been many nuggets, but I feel like, I'm thoroughly intrigued because I feel like I need more of these. I actually like these types of tools. Even with savings, I save myself, but then I also have these apps like Digit and Capital that save for me, and I'm able to set take 20% of this, or, every $2 take this. So I'm able to actually, save it in a strategic type way.
Yeah, in a realistic way. That's what makes Digit as an app so great, because it doesn't take out a specific amount every week
mm-hmm.
or every day.
It watches your spending habits.
It's reasonable.
Yeah.
Right.
And so that's what I like.
It's great. It's all, I think it's, and I don't think I have all the answers, but I think it's good help trying different things. And just being aware of what you can actually achieve, mm-hmm. in terms of New Year's resolutions or goals. I think too many people set goals for themselves that aren't actually achievable.
Yeah.
They're setting themselves up for failure at the start.
Mm-hmm. All right.
It's hard on these streets.
It is hard. It is very hard in these streets, actually. But thank you so much, Jaleesa, for gracing us with your knowledge. This is a lot of good information. And for, I think, many people who weren't aware of the whole world of diversity and inclusion and how it, it really has a serious impact on, getting jobs. It really does. Most people don't understand how this particular area is so it can be very either detrimental, or depending on what side of it you're on, it can be very helpful and very useful. But it's definitely important, especially moving into the new year where people are going to be looking for jobs, looking for different, different roles, even within their same company, that it's important to kind of have this understanding of this, of how all of this plays out in the grand scheme of things. But then thank you also for sharing some of your goals, because I feel like sometimes, people like to hear what other people have going on, wow, this, I had this same goal in my mind and I thought it was silly, but somebody else just talked about it. Now I feel like, okay, I've been validated. So I think, you know, it's really important to kind of share. I think, you know, for some reason, and I feel like we are moving past that, but we are still in like that weird space where people are still afraid to share with each other. You know, their hopes, their goals, their dreams. Like I said, I feel like we are moving toward that, away from that, because people are, you know, I'm seeing a lot of oversharing happening.
Yeah, people are going too far.
There's, you know, there's like an extreme, but, you know, I think it is important for people to get together and actually discuss and share, because if I didn't talk to you today, I wouldn't know about this SMART tool. And it sounds like a real thing, and it sounds like something that could be very, very useful in terms of project managing your life, which most of us need to do.
Yes.
Yeah. Ugh. So, yeah. So,
that's all I got is yes.
Yeah.
the last thing I will say is that and it goes to your point, is really just remembering, for anybody who's listening, like, these are all the tools that work for me, right? Like, not everybody's a planner, not everybody's a journal person, but, you know, you have to figure out and play around with different tools, identify mm-hmm. different things that work for you. Like, I like rules. As that is the person I am, I like time limits. I like very project management mm-hmm. type things. And, you know, that's me. But take it and run with it. Make it your own. Play around with it. You know, try something out for you. That's why last year I ended up a planner, because every time I bought one, it didn't work for me. So I just kept buying a new one, because I wanted something that, you know, worked for my mm-hmm. life and was realistic for me.
All right. Well,
I'm also going to send you an email about that project management.
Yes, please. Yes, please. And for those of you who are interested in learning more about this SMART project management life, get your life together tool, definitely send me an email at accordingtorp@gmail.com, or just, you know, send me a DM on my Instagram at accordingtorp as well. So, Jaleesa, thank you so much for being on today's show and sharing all of your knowledge. And Happy New Year, if I don't see you beforehand.
Happy New Year. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for listening. And you can all find me on my LinkedIn. Expand my network.
And that is Jaleesa Joseph. Would you like to spell that for the people?
Yeah, okay. It's spelled Jaleesa, J-E-L-L-I-S-A. Not the Dominican way, which is Jaleesa. Common spelling.
So
I'm a whole other show about me refusing to change my name after getting married.
Oh gosh. So Jaleesa, Jaleesa Joseph. You could find her on LinkedIn. Definitely check her out on LinkedIn. She's definitely a great resource. And that's a wrap, Jay.
Thank you.
Bye. All right, everybody. So that is a wrap. This is the last show of 2018, and it has been a great ride with you guys so far, but I am so looking forward to 2019 and all of the promises that it has for WJMS Radio and for myself. So before I give you the final word, let me just give you the last word from our sponsors, which is the Brooklyn Common Space at Bushwick. And for a limited time only, there is a limited time offer for 2 months membership. There's a special deal for 50% off the normal rate for office space at the Brooklyn Commons Bushwick location with a 6-month membership agreement. Guys, the year's about to be over. Do not miss out on this deal. And again, it's been such a pleasure speaking to you guys and engaging with you guys this year. And again, next year, we're looking to take this to a higher level, a new level. Definitely try to, you know, add some different segments, spice it up a little bit. I'm always open to your suggestions. So please, please, please send me an email at accordingtorp@gmail.com, or send me a DM on Instagram or on Facebook, According to RP. If you have any show suggestions, segment suggestions, if you want to be a guest on our show, definitely contact me. And if you want to sponsor this show, According to RP, I am always here to receive. With that being said, guys, Happy New Year, happy 2019, and I hope that 2019 brings you all of the joy, the peace, the love, the prosperity that you all deserve. Peace and love, and see you in the new year.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Thursday.
I can't wait to come back.